This is Waterworks, an aquatic history of Milwaukee.
So, John, where are we?
We are standing on the Milwaukee River at the north end of the Esterbrook Park.
And you want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name's Jonathan Stever. I'm a second-year master's history student.
And I, of course, am Chris Cantwell. I'm an assistant professor of history at UW-Milwaukee and the host of Waterworks, our aquatic history of Milwaukee. And, John, why have you brought me out here?
I'm here to really talk about how dams affected the flow of the river.
Well, that's kind of weird because there's no dam here. This looks like a completely natural landscape. We're standing on this kind of rocky outcropping. I see seagulls. Like, this looks like pristine nature. I don't see a dam at all.
Yeah, the rocky outcropping is actually the remnants of the old dam that was put in 1937. Actually, this is all man-made, essentially. It manipulated to really beautify the space around us.
Oh, so there's kind of like a paradox here, right? So this is sort of like a created natural, like a landscape in certain ways.
Exactly. Anything you see here has been manipulated any time between 1840 and present day now.
And is that true of just this area, or is that kind of true of the whole river in general?
Basically, when you start getting into the major cities, the mill town industry has really pumped up the manipulation of the river. And so as we get into urban Milwaukee here, this is where you really start seeing the river stop. All you think of is garter walls that are metal and plastic, and they're just there to support and actually elevate Milwaukee itself.
So is the story I'm looking at here, is that one I'll see in other parts of the river as well?
Really, the story of damming the river begins with Byron Kilbourne.
All right, well, why don't you and I get out of the water and you go ahead and take it from here.
What is a river? The obvious answer, of course, is that a river is a flowing body of water. Yet, rivers move in other ways as well. Their currents carve and shape the land surrounding them. In fact, it's not crazy to think about rivers as living entities, things that move and breathe, things that grow and die. This was certainly the viewpoint of the Native nations, discussed in earlier episodes, those who built earthen mounds to honor the spirits within the water that nourish Milwaukee. But in the time of the mound builders, the land fostered a common ground for these nations. The Kinnickinnick, Menominee, and Milwaukee rivers nourished the people until a European descendants evicted them and effectively metamorphosized the space surrounding Milwaukee, the land, and the water. Milwaukee's relationship with water has been a combative one. European descendants built bridges to cross over rivers. More commonly, they built dams to control the river's flow. While many people might point to the Milwaukee Bay as the reason for Milwaukee's existence, local historian John Gerda points to the North Avenue Dam as the core reason which allowed Milwaukee to flourish.
The first river dam is 1843, and that's Byron Kilbourne. And the intent there was to create a reliable head of water for a canal on the west side of the Milwaukee River. So he had no kind of other economic motive in mind, though he was just trying to, he had a huge economic motive in mind. He's trying to make the west side the heart of town. That would have gone out from the Menominee Valley, the Lake Country in Waukesha, the Bark River, and then to Fort Atkinson, down to the Rock, down to the Illinois, down to the Mississippi. So he had serious dreams of kind of being the open door to New Orleans.
This open door to New Orleans would fail to come to fruition. The legacy left behind, however, was the North Avenue Dam. The dam allowed industry to take root along the southern portion of the Milwaukee River, as factories harnessed its flow for production and ease for transportation. North of the dam, meanwhile, became something of a still pool. For the blossoming population of laborers in Milwaukee, the river became viewed as a place for rest and leisure. John Gerda explains.
Especially by the 1870s, when you have a large manufacturing establishment, these are people who are largely working 6 days a week, 10 to 12 hours a day. So your weekend was Sunday. That was it. And there was no air conditioning. So come July, August, September, people were just melting, in some of these working environments. So there was a real need and a felt demand for some place to cool off and recreate. At that point, there was no real access to Lake Michigan.
Early Milwaukee was viewed as a wonderland, but even more so, Milwaukee had its own wonderland to speak of. Joanna Demas, the stewardship director of the River Revitalization Foundation, describes a forgotten treasure.
In Hubbard Park, it almost looked like Six Flags, is at least my understanding. I wasn't around then. But there was a roller coaster that would then dump you out. It was almost like a water roller coaster. It would dump you out into the Milwaukee River.
This was Wonderland, an amusement park filled with electricity, nestled next to the Milwaukee River. By day, Wonderland boasted a wooden roller coaster, a carousel, a water slide, and numerous other entertainments. Just south along the river, another thrill ride opened for summer fun. John Goethe again.
By the 1890s, you know, it's kind of the thrills. So this is not, it's not an idle comparison, but in a lot of ways, the Upper Milwaukee River was the Wisconsin Dells of its time. You know, this was the water attractions. It was like the state's first water park in many ways. And the really cool one I'd like to have gone on was called Shoot the Chutes. It was just, so on the east bank of the river, just below North Avenue, it opened back in 1896, and it was a water toboggan.
Eventually, Milwaukee's unregulated use of the river as a resource for both industry and leisure caught up to the city. As we talked about in several episodes throughout this show, the urbanization of land and water had sullied original layout of the land, as well as the quality of the water. Swimming and drinking river water became really a risk of the individual.
If you're going to have a city with, you know, thousands of jobs and industries and big neighborhoods, Milwaukee developed these sewers whose only function was to transport human, animal, and industrial waste to a river. That's all it did. So by the 1880s, you know, that problem has reached critical proportions. 1870s and 80s is when it was inescapable, and it was, you know, beyond imagining, you know, from kind of our current thinking. So that line about the Milwaukee River is a currentless and yellowish murky stream with water like oil and an odor combined of the effluvia of 100 sewers. You know, I've said that enough to memorize it. You know, so it was nasty. It was just nasty.
The land around the water is no longer natural either. When the city dammed the river, businesses and residents artificially raised the shoreline to further contain it. Joanna Demas describes.
Most of the soil along the Milwaukee River would have been more flat, but if you ever walk along the Beer Line or the West Bank River trails, there's these steep slopes, and that's all just built up fill that was brought in so that they could put industries and commerce on top of the bluff so that they could be near the river and have access to that navigable water space.
It's hard to underscore just how different the river looked before the dams came down. If you've ever driven over the North Avenue or Locust Avenue bridges, so much of that green space underneath the bridges would be gone. Look at any turn of the century photo of the Milwaukee River and you won't see paths or trees. You'll just see a wide swath of slow moving water that stretches from hillside to hillside. As Tony described in the last episode, the city's commitment to dealing with pollution brought the North Avenue Dam down. But there was no guarantee that the land would become the verdant path it is today. In fact, the North Avenue Dam's removal basically transformed what was a river into an environmental hazard.
Beneficial use impairments have degraded the ability for humans to be able to use the waterways in a way that we commonly would use them with regards to recreation, fishing, swimming, etc.
This is Brennan Dow, who works with Wisconsin's Department of Natural Resources. And his job involves identifying these degraded waterways, or what are also called areas of concern.
An area of concern is an area of historical degradation, whether that's environmental, social, economics, anything of that nature, where industrialization occurred in areas adjacent to the Great Lakes, where things of legacy pollutants, issues with regards to water quality, and a whole other slew of what we call beneficial use impairments.
If that sounded like a lot of jargon, you'd be correct. But it's important to understand this side of river cleanup efforts. The key term here is legacy pollution. Brennan explains.
They don't degrade in the environment. They stay there, and they have their bioavailable for things like wildlife and fish.
Legacy pollution is unique. There is no traceable owner or producer of the pollutants. That means it falls entirely on those institutions tasked with publicly funded efforts to initiate said cleanup. Brennan is the coordinator who is tasked with this heavy endeavor.
Our part about the Area of Concern program is, since it's a non-regulatory program, meaning that the funding that you're doing or that the funding that's provided cannot overlap with any permitting or regulating thing. So if an industry or an organization has a discharge permit for a cool water intake and then discharging of warm water into the river, we can't pay or use that funding to help pay for addressing those types of permits or those permittees. When it comes down to the regulatory component or making sure that people adhere to not polluting the water, that isn't something that the AOC program can address. But we can address kind of the legacy portion and rely on policy to continue to address the water quality standpoint and to make sure that we're not, you know, continuing to do illicit discharges.
Milwaukee Estuary is just one of 43 areas of concern. Brennan's vision of cleanup has suffered logistical setbacks, of course, due to preventative measures towards the COVID-19 virus. Response towards areas of concern has often been embroiled in political dispute. It was only federally acknowledged in 1987. But their creation nonetheless provided environmental activists in Milwaukee and elsewhere an official channel by which they could carry out their work. In 1987, then-Wisconsin Governor Tommy Thompson created the Milwaukee River Revitalization Council in response to this political pressure. In 1991, then, the council developed the Riverway Plan. From this plan, the River Revitalization Foundation was erected in 1994. Joanna explains.
We've been around for over 25 years now. We started as the River Council, which stemmed from Governor Thompson's initiative. And he got together a bunch of local leaders to revitalize the river and wanted to make sure we didn't lose an asset and we protected it. Because by that time, everyone had kind of started to turn their backs towards the river and the green spaces because they were heavily polluted, degraded. So our guiding document is the Riverway Plan, which came out of that council, and that was published in 1994. That's been guiding our mission. So it lays out a foundation for a little bit of advocacy, which we don't really specialize in. We kind of do support other folks' initiatives, a lot of access, protection of land and improvement, and creating habitat for wildlife.
Alongside the River Revitalization Foundation, early iterations of the Milwaukee River Keeper were created as well. As the River Keeper for the Milwaukee River Keeper, Cheryl Nunn is tasked with numerous responsibilities and further explains her role.
I am the River Keeper, and what that means is I am kind of the voice for the waterways, the scientist for the waterways, lawyer for the waterways. Basically, we identify sources of pollution, we respond to citizen and community concerns, and then we work with a lot of different partners to find solutions to problems that are affecting the river. We spent decades working on studies to figure out how much contaminants are in the fish, how many contaminants are in some of the birds that eat aquatic insects. In addition to water quality, you can have really good water quality, but if you have no habitat, you don't have fish.
Where the Milwaukee River Keeper fulfills more activist roles against water pollution, the River Revitalization Foundation serves as the stewards of the Milwaukee Public Land Trust. Joanna Demas details the restoration efforts that have occurred on RRF property just north of the Humboldt Bridge.
That's what we've converted back into kind of a grassland savanna habitat. Not typically what you would find along the Milwaukee River in this stretch. You know, it used to be riparian forest and floodplain forest, but most of Wisconsin at one point was covered in savanna, nearly 10%. So we kind of decided to build a different habitat than you typically see here to fill that gap of habitat loss of our general Wisconsin plant communities.
And the foundation's work extends well beyond the city limits.
And that's Milwaukee County Park. And as you go north, either from RRF's property or Caesars Park, you enter the Milwaukee River Greenway, which is over 800 acres of green space. 70% of it is Milwaukee County parkland. And then there's a park that's owned by the Village of Shorewood. That would be Hubbard Park. But all that green space is majority of it is protected.
Milwaukee is unique for the sheer effort expended in supporting our waterways. The Milwaukee River Greenway, the 6-mile stretch between North Avenue and Silver Spring Drive, makes up the majority of urban reclamation projects. This, in a great way, is thanks to Joanna Demas and the crew at the River Revitalization Foundation. The Milwaukee River Keeper, on the other hand, effectively manages and keeps companies accountable for the discharge of pollutants. An example of these efforts came back in early December, when oil began spilling into the Milwaukee and Menominee rivers from the Komatsu plant next to the American Family Insurance field. Reports of the spill came into both the Wisconsin DNR and the Milwaukee Riverkeeper. When the local press wanted to understand what was going on, they turned to Cheryl Nen. But as much as Brennan, Cheryl, and Joanna have contributed to the health of Milwaukee's rivers, they are quick to point out their role is ultimately minor. For them, it's the scores of volunteers who report issues and give of their time so freely that makes the revitalization process possible for the Milwaukee River.
A lot of these organizations that are volunteering their time are working off grants, like short-term grants, to be able to do this work. A lot of the time it comes down to volunteers.
Milwaukee Riverkeeper is nonprofit, isn't it?
We are. We're nonprofit. We have around 10 staff right now.
And you do all of that with 10 staff?
I should say we have 3 AmeriCorps volunteers right now who are amazing, and we use a lot of student volunteers too as well to help with a lot of our work. I think we're able to operate at a greater level than we could with just staff alone, and part of that is because we have a pretty amazing volunteer base. We have, I would say with all of our monitoring programs, we're probably closer to 100 to 120 volunteers that are helping us with monitoring projects. And then on the water, kind of the cleanup side, we have a spring cleanup every year where we generally get, I'd say, 3,500 to 5,000 volunteers.
This is the community behind protecting and restoring the Milwaukee River Basin. Brennan Dow of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is the lead in coordinating the cleanup endeavor of the Milwaukee Estuary. While volunteers help to monitor, the Wisconsin DNR navigates the legacy contaminant cleanup. Though wavering amidst political debate, care and love carries on through those who are able to volunteer. And once a volunteer, always a volunteer. I'll end with a poem I wrote. The river. Winded willows. The grass grows tall. Of sturgeon spawns and dam removals. Dismantling. Resurrecting. Hope-filled dawns. The life. The changes, forgotten in the 9-to-5 monotony. But forest bathing, meditation, frolicking through native fauna, these things remind us of something forgotten. What we once knew, but became too busy for. So remember, revitalize the river, stand for the critters. The river must live on.
Jonathan Stever is a master's student in history at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee.
A Yankee ship came down the river. Blow, boys, blow. A Yankee ship came down the river. Blow, boys, bonny boys, blow.
Well, that's it for this season of Waterworks. And as I always note, this episode was produced by Jonathan Stever and myself, along with the students of History and New Media at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. But with this being the last episode of the season, I want to take a moment to thank everyone who helped bring Waterworks to fruition. Ann Hanlon, Beth Traylor, and Shiraz Bathina of UWM's Goldemeyer Library helped facilitate our access to technology and sources. Liz Covard of Ben Franklin's World and Salam Fataya of 88.9 Radio Milwaukee provided editorial consultation. And at the Milwaukee County Historical Society, Sienna Morrissey helped with social media and web presence, while Ben Barbera, who we've mentioned in every episode, curated the exhibit that inspired this whole project. Thanks to you all. The episode featured material from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Milwaukee, A City Built on Water by John Gerda, and The Milwaukee River Greenway by Edie Daniels. Music by Four Lines, Four Eyes, Johannes Weber, Ketza, and Tyops. Our concluding song is A Yankee Ship Came Down the River and comes from the Wisconsin Folk Song Collection at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Thanks this week go out to Kevin Thusius, John Gerda, Joanne Demas, Cheryl Nen, and Brennan Dow. And an extra special thanks, as always, to Ben Barbera of the Milwaukee County Historical Society, whose exhibit, Milwaukee Where the Waters Meet, inspired this season. Milwaukee Where the Waters Meet is on display at the Milwaukee County Historical Society from now through April 2022. Waterworks is a production of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee's Department of History and the Milwaukee County Historical Society. For more information about the show, including photographs and documents from the era, check out milwaukeehistory.net/podcast. And thanks, as always, for listening.
Heart and shark's liver, blow boys, bonny boys, blow. Can you guess what we had for supper? Blow, boys, blow. We had strong salt junk and weak tea water. Blow, boys, bonny boys, blow. Then blow us out and blow us homeward. Blow, boys, blow. Oh, blow today and blow tomorrow. Blow, boys, bonny boys, blow. Blow fair and steady, mild and pleasant. Blow, boys, blow. Oh, blow us into Boston Harbor. Blow, boys, bonny boys, blow. We'll blow ashore and blow our payday. Blow, boys, blow. Then blow aboard and blow away. Blow, boys, bonny boys, blow. We'll blow until our blow is over. Blow, boys, blow. From Singapore to cliffs of Dover, blow, boys, bonny boys, blow.